The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
The Fold is brought to you by O-Media, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Nau mai, hoki mai, kia The Fold, e mihi nei ko Duncan Greer toku ingoa. My guests today are Ryan and Alex from Makpadi, which is an animation studio in Auckland, which has been going for 21 years, which is quite mind-blowing. And I think particularly so because they really didn't get any kind of consistent funding until they were 15 years old. And I think this is one of these ciphers for, you know, what it can take to survive and build in this industry. Animation is almost uniquely difficult. It operates in a lot of it in the kids space, which is hard to commercialize and thus gets a bit neglected in this country. And they talk really quite poignantly, I think, about that on this episode. But you know, the sort of the passion and the self-belief that requires to just year after year be trying to claw your way into an industry that seems profoundly indifferent to you and just not quitting. Like, that to me is so beautiful. And there's this whole thread that we spend on that, which I think for anyone who's got a big dream, not to make this too Disney, but you know, sometimes it takes that, and just because a bunch of people in positions of power say no, that doesn't mean they're right, you know, and especially in a world that's changing as fast as we are right now. So I think Makpadi's story has some kind of pretty universal and powerful lessons in it. So they got their start. I mean, they did a bunch of things. They talk a lot about the importance of 48 Hours, which I think is a massively underrated institution in this country, this film festival where you bring together a team and you basically make a film, make a short film, and clues in the name in a weekend. And how that kind of gave them networks and validation. Alex describes the speech he made from the stage one year, which sounds like a great speech, to be honest. Someone should have reported on that. But, you know, and also, like, you know, they worked on an animated short on What Now. They went to Comic-Con, they had meetings with the biggest animation commissioners in the whole world in the US, but could not get a meeting at TVNZ. Honestly, super uncanny echoes of the Flight of the Conchords story in that respect. But they kept fighting, and eventually they got Barefoot Bandits as their first original show commission. So after, you know, 15 years as three people, basically in a basement or thereabouts, they grew to 16. Now they're at 40 people. They're you know, they've made shows that have played all around the world, and they're, you know, hard at work, about to get into making an adaptation of Bad Jelly the Witch, which, you know, will go very big, involves them basically doubling in scale again. You know, you can hear, you know, when you're talking to them, the frustration and the fight that they had to, you know, to get to this point, but also the underlying fundamental passion for the form that drove them here. And so I think while this is a story about an animation company, an animation production company in Auckland Central, it's got a whole lot of really strong lessons for people in every point in the media food chain about where talent is, how much, if you're on a commissioning or side, how much of an obligation there is to actually go and hunt and listen and be attentive. And also, if you're trying to get in, you just keep throwing yourself at the walls because eventually they come down. So this is the story of Makpadi on The Fold. Kia ora, Ryan. Kia ora, Alex. So good to have Makpadi on the fold.
Thanks for having us.
Well, yeah, and like I said, I feel like the thing that's really interesting to me is just that the breadth of your career, just the gestation of it. And I want to start at the start. I want to get a sense of what drew you into a space that wasn't necessarily particularly well developed in this country in terms of animation. And talk me through the kind of the beats of that first decade where you were really kind of scratching and clawing and trying to find a way in.
Yeah, I guess for us coming together and figuring out we just wanted to make our own stuff and kind of develop our own IP, it started at animation school here in Auckland. And myself, Alex, and Tim just kind of clicked instantly and wanted to make stuff. So, you know, we wanted to write skits and we wanted to write comics, and it was just kind of a natural sort of evolution from that point, right? We were like,
and the internet was kind of becoming this thing where you could watch creator-driven content, like even if it was just downloading QuickTime files or whatever at the time. And
so I think it was Tim who said, why don't we make some cartoons for the internet? And we were like, that sounds great.
He'd discovered Flash being this tool that some animators were using to make internet cartoons, and we were like thinking, that'd be fun. Let's make our own stuff and like have this instant portal to people all over the world. It just seemed quite exciting, you know?
Yeah, we didn't see any hurdles. We were like, cool, we'll set up in his parents' basement and we'll just make money that way.
So this is pre-YouTube.
Yeah, 2002.
And you know, like that was the I was kind of online in the late 90s, but I feel like we're a similar kind of generation.
Yeah,
and
absolutely, man.
I have like, you know, there's been a bit of nostalgia like that came out of like sort of the launch of Substack and the way that seemed to recall blogging. And you know, the comments recalled forum culture and so on. That for that era of the internet, you know, which was at once kind of very undeveloped but also kind of seemed ripe with possibility in a way that the more kind of structured internet doesn't now. Do you want to talk about the you know, how those early kind of QuickTime file type distributions and the sense of finding a community?
Yeah, it was really interesting, man, because, you know, I think Tim, again, being a bit more sort of savvy around that stuff, he sort of guided us a little bit. You know, we immediately had our website set up where people could look at our content, even though it wasn't much at the time.
The website was incredibly complex.
Yeah, we made
considering we had nothing to show.
Yeah, we made sure that everything moved and you click this and there was some animation here. It just sort of, very elaborate for the amount.
I believe it's
the
a lack website of you would call a pain in the ass these days. So we set up the website and we made a few little cartoons that we launched with. I think we had two.
Two shorts. Pilots, I guess.
And we just really bombarded websites and blogs. Were blogs around at that
blogs
time?
Blogs weren't quite there yet, particularly within the animation circles, you know. It took a few years for us to notice that a lot of animation artists that we sort of looked up to that were working primarily on shows coming out of the States, Cartoon Network things, Nickelodeon stuff, they all had Blogspot blogs, and they were posting their process work, they were posting their just whatever they were doing on the side, and you could go look at the art, comment on it. And we thought pretty quickly, like, this is a great way, this is another side little thing we can have along with our website that shows our professional work. And we could comment on all these people's work that we really looked up to, and that quickly created this like community that we were in on, where they would come
they
and check
no
out
idea
our work.
We were three guys in a basement with nothing behind us.
Yeah,
we just, you know, they just welcomed us, and they would always come and check out whatever we put up, or
which led to our, you know, somehow in 2005 we were able to get money together to go to America. We're still in the basement at this point, but we're like, we had all these huge grand ideas, all these show ideas that we were like, wanted to pitch to Cartoon Network and Disney and Nickelodeon.
So I went on the white pages on the internet, looked up Cartoon Network, rang and said, hey, we're coming. Can we come and pitch? And they were like, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And so, we put up on our blog, we were like, we're coming. But, you know, who wants to hang out? And then all these people were like, come to Cartoon Network. We'll show you around. Come to Nickelodeon. Let's do this. Let's do that. And we also did Comic-Con as well, that which was mind-blowing, but also allowed us to network and all that.
So it was a lot of face-to-face as much as we could, just telling people about ourselves and, you know, just making friends first before trying to ask favors or try to get in, you know, get a...
But the blogging directly led us to business connections, and that just felt amazing, you know, that the, you know, our idea around putting our work online actually worked to, you know, getting these meetings or making these friends in the industry. And particularly because America and LA and Burbank specifically feels like it's such the hub of this industry, you know. This
and they're also
animation,
you know, all the high up, the commissioners and the executives and that over there are desperate for the next SpongeBob, that next big hit. So they'll hear anybody out because they don't know who's going to walk. You know, you kind of don't have to work your way into that inner circle. That for us here, it kind of felt like that. Felt like we were just skating around the outside for so long. But over there, it was like, oh, these young guys might just have something.
Yeah, and I want to talk a bit more.
We didn't.
Yeah, they assumed we were New Zealand's Pixar, and we just let them. Yeah, three dudes in a basement. Yep, Pixar.
Had to start somewhere, right?
Yeah. Oh,
so,
yeah.
So before, because I do want to talk about that, you know, and you're hardly the first people to kind of note that tension between a much more receptive international development audience and a really what felt like very high walls in a local context. Mm-hmm, but before then, like, how were you sort of sustaining yourself, and what were the things that kind of helped create a sense of progress that allowed you to stick at it through a period where the money just wasn't there, the opportunities just weren't there?
Yeah, well, it wasn't there for quite a while. So we were doing
all sorts.
Side jobs. Yes. I was at a video store, nights and on weekends.
Working at a bar in the city.
But, we actually ran a magazine for the movie theatres. It was Village Entertainment back at that back when there was Village Cinemas.
Yeah.
Hustle.
I was thinking about the magazines the cinemas used to have, and I was like, I wonder if we could do that. Like, surely we could just make the magazine if we could convince them to pay for the printing and we just collect the advertising revenue. And it just worked. They were just like, oh, yeah, cool, let's do that. So we made, I think we were doing 45,000 issues.
But most of all, it was
we were hand-delivering most of them.
Most of all, it was a portal for us. We were like, oh, yeah, and we'll put our comics in it.
Yeah. So we put our comic in the back page, and then we would start getting people saying, I love that comic. And it was like, oh, this is...
Yeah.
What manipulative little shits.
Before, like, our dream of making cartoons full-time was a reality, there was a lot of graphic design work, illustration, things like that, that would sort of just... We'd hunt down or would come to us sort of organically. It was very, very random few years.
It was a very windy road into some weird weird areas just to.
But we made a couple of connections in kids' telly because we had this idea of if we could perhaps get a show or a segment on something that was pre-existing, namely What Now or, you know, whatever. There was Studio 2, I think, at the time too.
Yeah. But we knew they kind of took up a lot of the kids' funding.
Yeah, they got.
So we're like, rather than try to go up against them, why don't we just sort of offer our services to them in the form of an original cartoon for them? And
and the pitch being, we can turn your presenters into cartoon characters and they love that, of course. So that was our first gig on TV. We got an in with What Now with White Bay and made a show called Sparkle Friends, which was a 3 to 4 minute, just short.
It was a real crash course in making TV.
Because
it's a volume play as well, right?
Oh my God.
And it's relentless.
Well, we weren't doing it all year round. How many episodes was it? 10 to
10
start
at
with?
A time, yeah.
10 at a time, 10, chunks of 10, yeah. But the turnaround was mental and the money wasn't enough and all the cool things.
Yeah, but they basically said to us, we like this idea. You can either do it straight away now or wait till the next funding round. And we were like, we'll do it now.
Yeah,
so I think within a week or two, we were underway and we were writing it on a Monday and delivering it by the end of the week between just a you know, yeah, it was nuts. And,
yeah.
But, you know, it was the best. It was the best crash course in making quick fire, low budget animation in New Zealand.
Yeah, that we ever hope for. It was just the perfect training ground and they sort of left us alone more or less with the script. So we were just, because of the speed of the thing, we were just like, yeah, we just, this is what it is. And this is as silly as it's getting, and we really pushed the limits to what could be played on a Sunday morning.
And now we bump into 25-year-olds who are like, oh, I grew up with that cartoon.
Bro, some of them are working for us. Which is insane.
Yeah, that is weird.
So one thing that I know was important to that, because there is a, when you're trying to will something into being and trying to find a way into to this media industry, especially back then when it was, paradoxically it was bigger, better funded, but also way harder to get into than it is now, it feels like.
Yeah.
Institutions like 48 Hours can have a massive sort of validatory and another community, again, kind of important. So do you want to talk about 48 Hours?
Yeah, we're making the stuff for what now for a few years was again, just a really, really solid training ground and lots of fun, as well as it being really hard work. But we started to... that was around the time where we started to go to the 48 Hours and every year and meet people there and make friends in that sort of round. And we sort of thought, well, we're doing this really fast turnaround stuff each week. We think we could make a 48-hour film.
You were very fit.
Yeah. We had
muscle,
the training, you know, and it just, we had this sort of, as we always do, even to this day, this crazy self-belief mixed in with all the imposter syndrome and all the other shit.
Heaps of naivety.
Yeah, that was what it was mostly, right? Yeah. And
sure, we can do it.
Yeah, the first time we entered in 2007 was the first time, so fully animated flash cartoon, it was the first time an animated film had won Auckland.
Yeah.
And made the Nationals, something, right? Okay. I can't remember now, but anyway. It was a really, really fun experience. And we sort of subsequently entered another three times and placed pretty well as well. But what those experiences taught us was, and we talk about it all the time with kids and with students, animation students, and, you know, how beneficial the competition is itself to filmmaking, to teamwork, and how unique the experience is within the industry.
Working under pressure, not second guessing yourself, just going, you know, just finding a team you work well with and letting each person do what they're good at. And, you know, for us it was just a great, like, you know, we'd done commercial work or whatever we were doing that wasn't really fulfilling. So to have a weekend where you're just like, I have no idea what we're gonna make this weekend, and then by the end of Sunday it's like, well, we got a brand new short film. Yeah. And we can put it out to the world, and it's, you know.
Yeah.
And we made a calling card.
You know, it's interesting to see where, you know, it is a true breeding ground of Kiwi filmmaking talent, you know, that so many of us started there or got recognized there. For us, it was really nice to have an audience that wasn't, you know, kids on a Sunday morning. And we're essentially sort of making the same kind of content. We didn't age it up too much, you know. We're always just had this particular voice in us that kind of silly. The friends we made led to some of them working for us now, working with voice actors and comedians like Josh Thompson. And
well, we were in a group where you had like Lens Flare and you had Down Low. And it was like, you know, to see where, you know, we are now is really cool, because, you know,
and it doesn't,
we're all just mucking around those weekends.
It really feels like it's not given its flowers like that, you know, the competition.
Yeah,
you know?
Agree.
And, you know, one year, you know, Ryan alluded to this, but I can't remember which year we got.
I think it was the second year.
Was it?
We had a big break and we were like, should we try it again?
Yeah.
So we did it again. We did really well again. And we'd always kind of talked about how it was like a great place to find new talent. And we thought, you know, why are New Zealand On Air and that not constantly here every weekend watching these films? So we won, got up, and then Alex was...
Well, I said to the guys, because I'd had a few beers, and I said to the guys, I think I'm going to say something about this. And Ryan's like... And we got up, and I just sort of had a little rant about, you know, why the fuck aren't the Film Commission, why aren't New Zealand On Air here at the grand final talking to all the winners, talking to all the films they like, you know, the creators. Yeah, yeah. Why the fuck aren't they booking meetings with, you know, I'm on stage just rambling.
Yeah, but I mean, like, and I was there when Ariadna made her speech at the New Zealand Music Award. Like, it requires someone just to get a bit hoo-ha and say something
right?
sometimes.
Yeah, well, and you know, the crowd erupted in applause, and I was like, phew.
Yeah, well, you let that's how everyone's feeling, right?
Yeah, well, you could feel it, you know, and having been in that room a few times and seeing the fucking garbage that were funding at the time, like,
many years ago.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about that, because I mean, I love where this is going.
Yeah.
But you know what your attempts to try and find a vehicle to make something that was both professionally and artistically fulfilling, mm-hmm. but also worked for that audience, which, you know, back then, it's more complicated now, but back then there was still a really big kind of, you know, after school cartoons, morning cartoons, audience.
Yeah, it's so different now, man.
Yeah, so, you know, so it must have been, because you're a long way in, you know, you're still 10 years in, and there still isn't a huge amount to show. And that's what I just think, like, it's such a credit to you, such an important part of the story, is you just stick and you just stick and you stick until...
Yeah, we're pretty persistent, and, you know, like I said, it felt like, you know, we could go to America and just get the red carpet treatment, but TVNZ was up the hill from us, and we couldn't get a meeting, you know, and it was just this
literally couldn't get a meeting.
On our first trip to the States, as Ryan said, it's no exaggeration that they were just that Disney Channel. Oh my God, you guys are from New Zealand. Like, how long did it take to get? You know, they're just amazing.
Yeah, we met the president of the Disney Channel. Like, yeah, it was weird. We were just like, shit. They think
and then
someone.
We come back. We can literally see TVNZ from the balcony of our office down the road behind Vic Park. It took another year for us to get a fucking meeting. They wouldn't reply to emails.
Yeah.
And it got so silly to the one point we were I was copy and pasting the same fucking email every day, just being a smart ass. Yo, we're still here, you know? And it took, it's been very, very frustrating. And, you know, the longer we sort of, you know, because our dream was always to make, in the early days, make a cartoon like SpongeBob, you know? And as we further got into what the landscape is like in New Zealand, particularly at the time, it was like, I don't think we're going to get to make SpongeBob here.
Yeah. And that's what we thought we had in us, was just an international cartoon.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until we had this idea to pitch a Kiwi Christmas special. We're like, man, we don't have that. Like, England has it, UK, they all have their... Christmas special, they play animated Christmas special that plays every year. So we came up with
Snoopy's Christmas, or Charlie Brown's Christmas has gone for 50 years.
Yeah, Frosty, the snowman. And so we came up with this great little idea, had it all fully fleshed out, and we're like, let's see if we can pitch this. So we did, and we did it verbally, no visual stuff, and it was a disaster. Utter disaster. Like, we pitched and me and Alex were floundering and we were like, why did we bring no support material? And it just went awful.
We draw pictures. That would have been easy.
So to the commissioner's credit, I understand why her blank expression was what we were seeing. So we went away from that going, God damn it, we finally got a pitch meeting and we really blew it.
After 10 years.
Yeah. Well, we were actually pitching something else, I think, right?
No, so we went back.
I can't remember how.
So we went.
Gross.
Well, that was really dumb. Let's write this down. I don't know why we didn't write it down. So we wrote down a full pitch, two-page outline of the special, and it just existed. It was just there off to the side. So then we started developing a preschool show that we really, really wanted to make. So we got, you know, we had that first meeting, so getting the next meeting was a little easier. So we went in, pitched this preschool show.
You have to add in that it was had puppets in it.
Had puppets in
and
it.
And the reason that the commissioner didn't want this...
is because she doesn't like puppets.
She doesn't like puppets. And we were like, okay.
I mean, you know, it's definitely for you, not for the preschoolers who notoriously hate puppets.
Yes. We're big.
So we were like, nerds, you know, so. Again, we pitched it and it went mildly okay. But as we left, I also pointed out to her that we had slipped two pages of that Christmas idea. And we went back to the studio, and I don't know if it was within the same day or the next day, she rang and she was like, really like this idea. This idea is great. I was like, I know. before we knew it, the programmers were like, yep, we would support this. And so we essentially made a pilot for what became the Barefoot Bandits, our series that went for three series. Two and a half series.
But what was interesting about that, it was like we'd made that sort of pilot, which... Jesus, it was the three of us making this half commercial half hour of animation, longest thing we'd ever made. It was fucking
it was awful.
Painful.
Very little sleep.
Like, I was drinking Mountain Dew at midnight. It was awful. It was awful. We finished it. We delivered it, 2 days before Christmas?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and it played on Christmas Eve, and I think we delivered it, like...
And it had before. The core... Like, it's... We don't like looking at it, a lot of the work from that time, but love that it led to other, you know, this bigger idea of the Barefoot Bandits TV show. The core of the show was what would become the Barefoot Bandits is in there, and we sort of thought it would be a no-brainer for TVNZ and the commissioners to...
Because there was quite a span, right?
2 years, and it took 2 years for them to, like, cotton on to it being a show. We thought it would be sweet. They've seen it now. They know what the show could be, what we're trying to do. So that was quite frustrating.
It kind of just got dumped on Christmas Eve and no one really watched it. And then it was the next year they replayed it a week out from Christmas and it rated really well.
Interesting.
So do you remember how fun it was trying to get them to promote it? Where
There was no marketing done
We paid for posters
around the city.
To go around the city, bro.
We got a paste-up company to go and do posters everywhere.
We did that ourselves.
I mean, and this is one of the sort of, again, one of these tensions in that... TVNZ, and this is not a criticism, and this is just literally fundamental to their business model, is that they are commercially funded.
But
a lot of kids' programming has low to no commercialization, so it's really hard to get organizational emphasis on something, especially now in this era.
Absolutely, yeah, totally. Man.
So, you know, and that's why the public media entity, you know, one of the big motivating factors was kids' content.
The Fold is brought to you by oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa, with over 4,000 out-of-home advertising sites nationwide across both street furniture and retail centres. I'm super grateful to oMedia for enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Let's talk about your experience when you finally got your break. Tell us about Barefoot Bandits and about the huge validation, not just to make it, but then to actually be able to sell it offshore as well.
Yeah. Well, the goal was always, we want to get a TV show. And then when that kind of happened, obviously it was like a scary, exciting moment, to get to make 10 episodes for the first, the kickoff of it, 10 episodes, 22 minutes. It was a very big project to take on, yeah. right? But, you know, so, which meant we had to grow a little bit, which was scary as well. But we hired an amazing crew. We grew to 16 people. But it was. I think it took us 14 months to make that first season, right?
Roundabout.
We moved offices and everything. So it was a really sort of important and crazy learning.
Because there was a lot of pressure as well. Because at that point, the only thing that really happened animation TV series wise was Brotown, which had obviously been popular, but had also been really expensive.
Yeah.
So TV 3 at the time were like,
no more animation.
We're not touching animation again because that really cost us a lot. And so there was that thing of like, okay, can anyone actually do it for the price that
we New Zealand can? On Air, as a result too, were very sort of iffy about animation of that size.
So we had worked out, we're like, well, the three of us produced this amount a week, which was probably a dumb place to, work out a budget from.
Given the amount of Mountain Dew that they
required. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. So we worked that out and we were like, I think we can do this for a fraction of what.
But it came down to it came down to the software we were using. We were adamant that we could keep it all in-house. You know, Brotown, a lot of those last few seasons were animated in India, which not a lot of people know about. The money went offshore, which to us is ridiculous. We wanted to support the industry here. We knew a lot of animators out of work.
We wanted to grow it, and we wanted, you know, all these students who were learning to animate to be able to put that into practice, like we did, you know.
Knowing most studios, particularly in Auckland, are just kind of service studios making ads and things, we stuck to our guns and wanted to make character-driven stuff, you know, comedy. And, that was the sort of part of the big pitch was like, we're cheaper, but we can make, you know, lots of it. And
make it look like a million bucks.
So the pitch to... sort of 10 years earlier to Whitebait to make Sparkle Friends was exactly the same to get Barefoot Bandits off the ground.
Yeah, cheap and fast.
Yeah.
During that time, like making Missing Christmas, a Christmas special, and then Barefoot Bandits, we actually found a genuine love for making Kiwi content that would have universal themes, but finding the fun and listening to Kiwi voices and... actors that we had and comedians.
Because you had pretty amazing voice talent.
We got everyone we wanted, we kind of got. So it was Timmy Weta Morrison and Rhys Darby, and we've had the Top Twins, we've had...
Tammy Davis, Laurie Daniels.
Twila Blakely and...
Josh Thompson.
Everyone.
It was just a who's who, particularly that first season. So we...
Richard O'Brien.
Yeah, that was...
tracked him down and he was like, yeah, cool.
But... what was interesting about the whole... So we finally got our TV show. Our dreams are sort of coming true in that sense. But what we sort of quickly found out was that this dream for us to get our own TV show happened right when TV was dying.
and dying first, youngest.
Yes.
Yeah, so absolutely. Because we had lost kids to YouTube.
We had this weird experience where... So when we got the funding, we'd put this project in as in the kids' funding round, assuming that it would probably just play after school or whatever, Saturday mornings, you know, wherever they chose to put it. We just wanted to make the thing. TVNZ started seeing scripts, they were like, "Wow, this is kind of this has aged up a little bit. Like, this could be played prime time," and we thought, "Fuck." Cool. Yeah.
It's kind of what we'd secretly hoped. We're like, we're kind of writing a family show. So.
Yeah, our Goldilocks zone is that Pixar family vibe of, you know, make for adults with kids in mind and, you know, because we're just making stuff for ourselves that makes us laugh. So once they'd sort of finally seen that, that made things a little sort of more exciting, thinking, shit, we're going to get like sort of this, what does a primetime slot look like? How do TVNZ treat a primetime show? And
well, and then you are in a commercial zone.
Yeah, you're exactly. Actually part of
We were like, okay, do we want to start promoting it and push? It was got a 6:30 time slot, I believe.
Yeah.
Which was like, that's cool. We were the lead into The Simpsons, and we were like, what the? That's, if you'd told 10-year-old me this, I would have died.
It was wild.
Yeah, so at the time... You know, we were just heads down, bums up, working really hard. And every now and then we'd be like, oh, we should promote this. And they would be like, no, we've got a strategy, we've got a plan, so just leave it. So we're like, okay, that's so exciting that someone would take this out of our hands.
And yeah, thinking about like what TV3 had done with Brotown, like buses and banners,
yeah,
billboards.
Yeah, that was everywhere.
So it was getting really close to launch.
And we had this massive voice cast. Happening?
Like, so we got we reached out and said, what's the strategy? So they hooked up a meeting with the promo department and me and Alex went up and we were like, okay, they're going to tell us what's happening. And we sat down and hopefully this promo department isn't there anymore. They said, so what's the show?
This is 3 weeks from launch.
And we said, it's an animated family series about, kind of like Kiwi Goonies. And we've got this all-star cast. Everyone is a big name. And they were like, this sounds great. We're like, yeah, it does. And they were like,
by then, just for people listening who don't know, like Sunday magazine's closed, all of the monthlies are gone.
100%.
Like a lot of the opportunities are just booked.
Yeah, and we had a few ideas, like there's, print ideas to get into sort of, there's a kids mag that goes to all the schools and stuff, thinking that might be an easy.
We've been in touch with them to be like, how much is it? We thought we'd just present these, some extra ideas.
Which is not even, this is so in the weeds, but that's not supposed to be the production company's responsibility, but you're just super passionate about it.
Oh, yeah, well. This is our baby. This is our, we
15 years to this point.
We love making what we make, and we were so proud of what we've been able to achieve out of the gate with this thing. And
our hearts sank as we realized they didn't realize it was a 6:30 time slot. They didn't know what the show was. And we were kind of, and they were like, and then the real kick in the guts was they were like, we don't really have time to make promos. We were like, but this is like a big deal. It's the first family animated series for New Zealand. Brotown was oldest. I considered that an older series, even though families found it. But I was like, this is straight for, all families. It's safe. It's fun. It's silly. Yeah. So they were like, can you make them? So we had to go back to the studio. There was no marketing plan, and we had to learn to make promos. And that's not trivial.
That's really specific.
That's a really specific skill, and I respect those that do that because I don't even know where to begin. I've made something that's half hour long, and now I've got to figure out how to.
The whole thing is excellent. You're going to need a much bigger.
Do they
slot
do
for
half
promo.
Hour ads?
Yeah.
I was. I made the first promo, I cut it, and we shared it and played it, and the first bit of feedback was, I remember it killed me on Facebook, I think. It was just like, oh, this promo isn't good. It's cut really badly and stuff. And I was like,
no fucking shit.
I know. That's not my job. And we got really good at it really quick.
And thankfully, the titles for the Barefoot Bandits in classic true Saturday morning cartoon style.
Very strong.
Explain the show.
So we just put that out and
got a great song, and
I'd written a song, and we'd got Tommy Ill and he came in and he put it all together for us, and it sounds amazing. It was really, really gutting, and
it just kind of snowballed from there too, because we quickly were told, by the way, it's not really rating that well at 6:30. Everyone's watching the news.
So they played six episodes and then played the last four on Sunday morning. So everything about the launch of it was just
a shambles,
upsetting. Yeah. And, we were still excited and promoting every episode as it came out. But anyway, it found a good audience on a Saturday morning, was it, or a Sunday morning? I can't really
remember. I don't know, dude. I mean,
I've blanked that part of my memory is
your body kind of looks after its trauma.
It's a bit like that, man. Like, because again, it was just, we're so proud of the work we've done, and we've getting the crew together and just what we were able to achieve with such a small crew. 16 people made that series, and anyone we talked to in the States or overseas was like, our credits would go for a couple of cards long, and then, endless animators on American shows and things. And so it was quite the achievement. So it is a bit.
It's hard to not.
Pretty gutting.
At that point, it was hard to not get bitter because, like Tim, we were wearing multiple hats. We were editors, we were you know, Alex was character designing, doing background design. We were directing, we were writing, we were doing everything. And then, you know, we would come in the morning and Tim had slept there the night because he had been editing until like 4 o'clock in the morning just to get this stuff delivered, and to then it not be met with the same sort of enthusiasm and passion.
That gap is where a lot of issues.
And to us, it was like, there's a communication breakdown between the funders, the broadcasters, the creatives.
Yeah.
It's a real...
And that's honestly like, that's kind of, you talk to any creator, that's the story.
Yeah.
And it's not the same now, but it doesn't feel solved by any means.
No, it's definitely better, but yeah,
So let's talk, because I feel like we've dwelled on the hard and the graph and so on, which honestly, like the further you get from it, the more you kind of romanticize it and the brutal bits kind of smooth over. And,
sure.
We definitely laugh about that stuff. Like, yeah. We tell that story about the promo thing and it's just so stupid.
Yeah, it feels like a sitcom moment, really, doesn't it?
Well, that's the thing. You always imagine, I don't know about you, but I always imagine the spinoff as a sitcom.
Yeah. In my mind. Just waiting for the Curb Your Enthusiasm music to start up.
pretty much. So, but as we sit here now, you've got 40-odd people in your office and you're about to scale up again to 75, 80. So some good things have certainly happened in the last 5 years. So pick a couple of kind of key beats where things kind of lifted off for you and what drove that.
Well, I guess a big one was the fact that New Zealand On Air got behind the Barefoot Bandit season 2 before we had even really gone to air. So that was pretty amazing for season 1. Mm. And it was pretty unheard of. But we had it. So that felt like...
What did that look like? Like how did New Zealand On Air, the funder, you know, even ahead of the network in a way, getting behind it, what did they do and how did that catalyze change for you?
Yeah, I guess for us as well, we really wanted New Zealand On Air to feel like they were involved the whole way. Because a lot of the time it feels like you know, they give it the thumbs up and then you kind of go away and make this thing. But we're like, we wanted them to see what we're doing as we're doing it. So we would share whatever we'd done, little clips. And we felt a real excitement from New Zealand On Air. And we couldn't, they were amazing. And they always have been and still are really supportive of what we do. I think they understood what we were trying to do, that we're trying to build this industry in the country. So we sort of pled our case of like, if we lose momentum, starting this up again may not happen. So we were like, we need to kind of finish the Barefoot Bandit season 1 and roll into season 2 to sort of, you know, not lose any animators, not. And they listened and you know, which helped get TVNZ to go, oh, okay, then we'll back that one, back season 2. The programmers were really supportive there as well. Because everyone could see that it was a good thing we'd made. I think there was just that, there was a lot of like hands are tied. We don't have money for marketing. We don't have, you know, there's a lot of those sort of stories.
Yeah.
But that just kind of, it meant we'd kept a bunch of animators for a good long time. Yeah. Like it was 3 years. And that's pretty unheard of in animation. Like, you know, a lot of animators and artists will work for 6 months and then move on to the next studio and then move on to the next project, which is horrible. We always said if we start growing, our goal is to work with great people and keep them on as long as they want to be with us at Muckputty. And, you know,
some stability,
We had plenty of hard times through the 15 years before then, but we always enjoyed what we were doing. The three of us got along. You know, we've never had an argument in 21 years. Nothing that isn't, no, this fart doesn't sound right. That's about as heat as it gets. But...
He's always critiquing my farts.
Yeah. Try again. Come back in the morning.
The same with feeling.
Yeah. We were like, I just want to build a creative team and emulate what the three of us feel with a bigger team.
Mm.
And, you know, it's really cliche and you see a lot of people make jokes about, you know, building a family and, you know, they're a family. But, you know, that's what we wanted. The three of us felt like that. So we were really scared. Every time we grew, we were like, is this the point we lose it? And it didn't. 16 people, it was the same. We had that same sort of relaxed atmosphere as like, if you've got kids, you need to go to a school thing, go to it. Come back. And we found that the crew would like still get everything done because they'd given that level of freedom. So it wasn't like start at 9 and finish at 6. It was like, you're responsible for your timekeeping and this is what we expect to be
just
delivered.
Meet the deadlines.
And yeah, it just worked really well. So we then got screen time came to us and we're like, hey, we have this seed of an idea for a show. Can you guys help us? And we're like, sweet. Well, we put in a, you know, this will cost this much. And
yeah, it was basically just they had the sort of a list. Because at the time, we kind of knew season 3 of Bandits wasn't going to happen, right?
We were
pretty nervous. Of like, shit, what's the next gig?
Service sort of gig. But as we started talking with Screen Time and they seemed really collaborative, they were like, I kind of just said, can I write it? Like, can we write it? And they were like, oh, okay. We didn't really put two and two together that you would offer that service as well. And we're like, well, that's where we think our strengths really lie, yeah, is in our writing. We can make the images match that, no problem. But, you know, we always promoted that side of things. Yeah. And they were like, yeah, cool. So
yeah, they had
we
no
forgot about it.
Animation.
It went away. And then I think like 6 months later, it popped up. And they're like, yeah, there's a 52-episode order for this show. And we kind of got to get going. We have to do it within a particular financial year for Australia.
And yeah, it was for Channel 10 and Aussie. Yeah.
Channel 10
so,
and Aussie.
So they had found an in to, at the time, Kiwi Productions could get some Aussie money that way because that was counted as local content over there at the time.
Yeah.
So it was like we had no idea that was like a whole thing. But yeah, it meant that we got this pretty decent budget for this thing.
They let us redevelop the whole thing. So it became a muck putty cartoon. It was us through and through.
We staffed
up. We
to
were like,
52,
oh God, we need
50
odd people. Yeah. And yeah, so we grew from 16 to 50 something in a matter of a month or two. And it was just nuts. I don't even remember doing it.
Yeah, it was fucking wild, man. We
finding the crew, we had a lot of students straight off their course. So they needed to be sort of skilled up and taught. And,
yep.
And again, back to what I was saying before, we were also really concerned that we would lose the muck putty dynamic of you know, it's still being a fun job. We're making cartoons. There shouldn't be any, you know, it should be mostly fun, even though it's hard work.
Yeah.
And now the next move is for Netflix. Is that right?
Well, it could be. We're still working those things out. But yeah, within that time, making the Barefoot Bandits and stuff like that, we actually, Alex was drawing a witch for something else.
Yeah.
And then the subject of Bad Jelly the Witch came up. And we're like, this hasn't really been the definitive animated Bad Jelly the Witch. You know, there was something on YouTube that was kind of, yeah. But we were like, I wonder how easy it is to get the rights to something like that. And that is not, that's not something we've ever considered. We were just like, it's our ideas. We make up our own ideas and we make, you know, try and get that funded. Yeah. So we're like, oh, let's sort of see what the world of, like, you know, acquiring a...
Franchise IP.
Yeah. So like, I went on Twitter and I just tweeted, does anyone know who I would contact? Yeah. Giving the entire country the same idea. good one, Ryan. But a guy replied and was like, yeah, talk to this person. So I went and talked to this person and that put me in contact with the guy who has the rights to the play, the stage play that constantly travels New Zealand. And he was like, right, there's this lady, Norma. She used to be Spike Milligan's old assistant. Now she kind of controls the estate. She's in her 80s and she doesn't answer emails very often, but give it a try.
Give it a shot.
Yeah. So Alex drew up a bunch of characters.
Yeah,
we
just
flicked
to
it off and said,
an idea out there.
We love Bad Jelly. We think we would be the right guys to make it into a movie or a series. Would you guys be willing to let us have that, you know, have the property and just go and pitch? We couldn't offer any money for the property, you know, because that's the budgets we got were just the budgets for the shows. There's no profit in that. There's no, you know.
No.
And we got a reply sort of quickly.
Yeah.
And she just said, in principle, we're interested. But then she started critiquing all the drawings. And we're like, that's not what we were asking for.
Come down, lady.
Yeah. So it was a bit of, you know, back and forth for a little while. And we were.
Yeah.
But then Quimbo's Quest, this show with Screen Time, came up and sort of just that got sort of swept away.
Yeah.
And then as we were doing Quimbo's Quest, we met this guy, Roger Shakes, and became pretty good friends with him. And he works in sort of similar sort of areas, but he's a real, you know, around IP and stuff. And he was like, you know, what else do you guys want to do? And we mentioned that we had a pursued Bad Jelly, and he was like, holy shit, let's do it. So we just on our own started up emailing again, asking, you know, Norma, you know, are you still interested? Getting no reply, sent another one, sent some new sketches, nothing. And then maybe a couple of months later, we get an email from a guy, Nathan, a Kiwi guy living in England, who said, we've just noticed that you've been, you know, contacting Norma. She actually passed away a year ago.
That's actually probably the best excuse for not replying to an email.
I will, still a bit miffed, but oh well. And he was like, look, I'm a Kiwi. I'd love it if a Kiwi company was the one, you know, to do this. So he's like, I happen to be coming to New Zealand for a holiday. He was like, let's catch up. So yeah, from there, it sort of just took off, and the Milligan family were amazing. They heard us out. We got along with them really well. The daughters were all very silly, like Spike Milligan. So our sense of humor's matched. And yeah, that's kind of, we just started putting together a really, really comprehensive pitch.
Yeah, we had a whole bunch of the crew working on concept art, and we were all sort of drawing, putting together this pitch Bible. And then all the while sort of, you know, Hey Hey had kicked off. We were making short back to making, because Quimbo's Quest, the second season, didn't happen. It was just like a one and done.
The Aussie quota stuff all disappeared.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have, as soon as they realised they were sending money to New Zealand, that,
they cut him off.
It was a one and done, which was disappointing.
ScoMo is not going to be.
Because it was, it was an interesting experience, the whole thing. And again, crewing up was cool. We had this huge, big, sort of, as Ryan said, like, yeah, family now that we were kind of...
And again, we had committed to we're not going to let people go.
Yeah.
Because the people have families, and why should they have these horrible down periods between, you know, that was hard.
That's
expensive.
It's very expensive.
Yeah. Particularly in an industry that is, you know, quite under
shaky. You know, like just fundamentally.
Yeah. Really hard to mess with when Hey Hey came around, again, thought it was a great idea, but it sort of, yeah, again, sort of...
It was right idea, wrong time.
Fractured the budgets again, so it sort of, yeah. We made some really fun stuff there, the drawing show, Jandelburn, both shows that we're really, really proud of. Another bunch of episodes of The Barefoot Bandits. Then in the first lockdown, we got Tumiki Space, which was a spin-off of The Barefoot Bandits, a sci-fi... sort of animated sci-fi comedy.
That's a whole other podcast, making an animated show in lockdown.
Yeah.
not recommended, but is doable.
But then sort of, we were super grateful to have some work through that period too. It was crazy, like everyone working at home and things. But post the lockdown and post-COVID and all that stuff, are we post-COVID? I don't know. Still exists. But
we're fairly in it still.
Yeah. They had New Zealand On Air and the Film Commission, and that announced that sort of fund to help the screeners.
Scale international production.
Yeah. And the whole time we were, you know, sort of developing this Bad Jelly idea behind the scenes and stuff, we're sort of thinking, who do we pitch it to? How do we get, you know, what?
In our mind, where it was does it always go? New Zealand's never going to be able to afford what we want this show to be.
Yeah.
So this is the big international
the premium,
opportunity.
Yeah, have, exactly. It's it's this crazy, unique property where it's a UK creator who is internationally renowned, but this particular story is so massive in New Zealand.
Mm.
Like they're not even that familiar with Bad Jelly in the UK, which is odd.
Yeah, you know? It is odd. And you know, like,
but it just means so much to Kiwis.
Which is like, hence why you're such perfect people to make it.
Yeah.
So just to kind of, and there's a way of, I think, fusing this, because like, and we're sort of almost out of time, but the thing that I want to kind of end on is like, you've been making content for kids or trying to a lot for the first part of it for 20 years, during which time kids' consumption, you know, habits have changed so massively.
Yeah.
To the point where the traditional things that you were trying to do, they don't exist anymore. To a certain extent, even to where it's still happening, it's on some level a pantomime of a lost behavior, which just doesn't feel great, even if there is still some kind of funding available for it. So Whereas this project, in terms of its scale and its plausible sale to a big streamer, well, that actually does fit a modern behavior type.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because while
absolutely.
YouTube is the biggest thing,
yeah.
the you know, Disney Plus, Netflix, et cetera, have big young audiences. They have big yeah. funds. And
it's where families are finding shows yeah. to watch together again.
Those are the new family channels,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So... You know, this whole moment must be freighted with a huge sense of everything leading to this moment and a huge amount on it.
I had a sleepless night two nights ago where it all just sort of
one
came
of
into focus, and I went, oh yeah, 6 years ago we talked about Bad Jelly in a room with just the three of us, and then we're going to make this show.
Yeah.
And it's got this huge weight of, you know, importance from Kiwis, but it's instantly going to be international.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, we've always talked in our more down moments, which, you know, happen every now and again, where things sort of get a bit scary and whatever. If we look back at our career, the snowball of it all, this thing leading to that thing, to this thing, to that thing, has all been, the momentum's been going the same way. Now, the snowball might have got smaller at some points and bigger, you know, but...
But it always rolled.
Downhill? yeah.
But oh, God.
Just the momentum... And for it to lead to this moment where we not only you know had the idea to about Bad Jelly, like there's no animated thing of Bad Jelly, trying to track down the rights to it, getting them for nothing really, like, yeah. which was weird because we got no money and they said yes to that.
Like, great deal.
Yeah, well, we've got no money. We just offered them some good exposure.
Yeah, just and the fact that you know yeah that the estate had really been doing nothing with his. Kids stuff for forever. There's so much potential in it, and the idea that a Kiwi studio brings this to life is just, and you know we've been training making this, you know, the character driven comedy, you know, like
yeah,
it just yeah, as you say, it all seems to be the you know leading to this moment, and it's a weird thing to think about, really. And we get a lot
do
of...
Do it just before you try to go to sleep.
Yeah, we do. We get a lot of Kiwi, you know, we've got in touch with some potential voice actors, things like that.
Yeah, but people are going to be really... We can't talk about too much, but people are going to be really happy with what we're pulling together.
Some muck-putty usual suspects, perhaps, in the mix.
But
yeah, a lot of their comments are, don't fuck it up. So, yeah, it means a lot to Kiwis, particularly in our age bracket, right? Like, that, you know, we sort of grew up with it, and everyone sort of has their idea of what it might look like or what it should look like. So, I mean, I hope we surprise a lot of people with the flavour we bring to it, because, you know, the audio itself is only 20-something minutes. Spike reading the
whole
book. We're
making 13
well, 22 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're expanding things, and yeah, it's a rich, fun fantasy world that we can really dig into. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited for you guys, and
thanks, man,
to see where it goes. And
yeah.
Honestly, it's been such a every so often one of these pods, it's just like the texture of the story is right there, and it feels like it's a little shadow history of the last 20 years
in
these kind of weird industries. So this is absolutely one of those. I really appreciate you coming.
Oh, thanks,
Paul.
Thanks
yeah.
for having us.
Yeah, yeah, thanks for having us.
It.
Yeah, it's really nice to sort of, you know, often it feels like we have gone under the radar a little bit, but it's always nice to know that people are familiar with our work. And
I think our industry, not just animation, but just film and TV in general, I think we all forget to sort of like pop our heads up and see what others are doing. And, you know, we've tried to change that over the years. It's like, you know, there's no real competition here. It's too small a country to have, you know, rivals. It's like we might as well all work together and make cool stuff and show the world.
That was The Fold, brought to you by our partners at oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Huge thanks to oMedia for sponsoring this episode of The Fold and enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
the Spinoff Podcast Network.